Well, we're going to learn more because he is the Executive Vice President for Communications and Industry Relations joining us here today. Alan Bierke. Hey, Alan, good morning. Hello to you.
Good morning.
Well, let's talk about the farm bill. And now that the House actually has a speaker, what are you figuring out on that? What's the prospect of a new farm bill?
Well, it's an interesting dynamic to have essentially, a new dynamic in Congress in the middle of the Congress itself. This is pretty rare in American history. But now that we have Speaker Johnson, we have an ability to get Congress moving and functioning again. And, of course, one of the things that's before Congress right now is the Farm Bill. The previous one expired September 30th. There's always the situation where, the pressure increases as programs expire for a new law to be passed. The current new speaker has actually been pretty skeptical of farm bill programs in the past. He's questioned the amount of spending that goes into it. It questions how much farmers need to be subsidized. Of course, has a much greater concern about some of the social spending, the WIC program and, of course, food stamps. And this always becomes the big argument within the farm bill. The question is how hard line are these discussions going to be? The way that it is always traditionally played out with the farm bill is the commodity groups ally with the hunger community, and you get your commodity programs lined up, and then you get your food stamp programs lined up, and then the Democrats will want their money for the welfare programs, and the Republicans will want the money for the farm payments, and they come up with an agreement, and it passes Congress with overwhelming bipartisan majorities. This is usually a pretty popular piece of legislation. One of the challenges that the farm bill has right now, though, of course, is it even brought to the floor? We are looking still in less than 3 weeks, a deadline for a potential other government shutdown. We have the president's bill that deals with, Ukraine and Israel and the border. That has been looked at in the Senate, but we're not quite sure where the House is going to go with it. And Speaker Johnson has the incredible ability to decide what even gets to the floor or not. The question is going to be, having been through what we've been through, are we going to have a little bit more of a conciliatory time and folks are going to bring legislation forth and then are going to be debated, in which case you have a pretty good shot with the farm bill, given, the history of how it works. If it's a more confrontational tone in which you don't see legislation coming up, or when you do, it's very much written for the very conservative wing of the Republican Party to the point where these things become non-starters in the Senate, now we have a recipe for gridlock. And you don't know where somebody is going to fall until they're in the position. But if you take a look at the speaker's history, it's been more the latter school of supporting, legislation that is more designed to extract concessions from the Democrats before a conversation even begins, rather than something that both parties may be able to get on a little more quickly. And there's a lot to be seen, and the thing is, the farm bill may be important to the farm community, but it's not that big of an issue to the broader world at large, which makes you a little bit nervous in that they're not thinking about it. And this is exactly the sort of thing that can slip through the cracks for quite a while people are trying to figure out other stuff.
Well, it's going to be interesting, as you say, in terms of where this speaker is going to head, because he did say, as part of his acceptance speech, is that he understood that he represented all of Congress and the entire country. That seemed to be an olive branch across the aisle to the other side and to Hakeem Jeffries. But we'll see what happens there. Hey, I understand that this last week you were in Des Moines at the World Food Prize. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so just over in Iowa, I don't make it every year, but I make it enough years that it almost feels like a tradition. The World Food Prize is awarded to someone who has done important work in food and agriculture and to help feed the world. This year it went to a woman named Heidi Kuhn, who actually works with a group that clears landmines from agricultural lands, which is, of course, particularly pertinent this day and age. It's also a gathering for a lot of folks who are interested in, again, global food security, using agriculture as a tool towards alleviating poverty. And it's just interesting hanging out with these folks. And I have been now going to this conference on and off for about the last 15 years. Now, of course, as a representative of the dairy industry, just seeing what people's assumptions are about what the solution is going to be. And, you know, there's a lot of folks in the environmental community, the sustainability community, that are very skeptical of cows. You know, they take a look at emissions. They take a look at contributions to greenhouse gases. And this, you know, at the most simplistic, you'll have folks that say, well, if we could just get rid of all those cows, our problems would go away. The role of dairy, of course, is to take a look at how it's a part of the solution and how there's a lot of things that those cows do that are actually quite positive in terms of where they are grazing, in terms of what their practices are. You talk a lot about things like the Industry Net Zero Initiative and taking a look at how, you know, there are tools available and can become available for dairy farmers where you could actually take some of these emissions and put them to positive use, and as well as reducing the ones that you have. You know, and that's a conversation that's important to have, because most people are involved in agriculture, and even fewer of those people are involved in dairy. And if the industry is going to be viable and sustainable beyond the next generation or so, you kind of have to get along with the trend that we're seeing worldwide, which is to this real concern about reducing emissions and controlling climate change. So it's a really important place to be there. Krista Harden, the CEO of the U.S. Dairy Export Council, was there. Well, we also had an Iowa dairy family, Amber and Ben Selman from Maquoketa. They work with Prairie Farms, and they were on a panel, and they met with some young leaders who are coming up and looking at agriculture as a possible path to talk a little bit about what dairy can do. It's important stuff, and it's good for dairy to be at the World Food Prize. And, hey, what can beat Des Moines in August? Excuse me. What can beat Des Moines in October?
There we go. All right. Yeah, but you talk about clearing landmines. You know, I just can't get out of my mind. I think I saw a story on this early on with the Ukrainian war, where I saw, you know, we think, our farmers think we have problems here, but, you know, they were wearing combat gear when they were planting and then ultimately harvesting. It's just mind-boggling with what they have to go through over in Ukraine to get the crop in and then get the crop out.
It is, and you just see some harrowing stories out of agriculture today and what farmers are experiencing through no fault of their own. You know, you brought up Ukraine. We're talking about a country that has landmines over 30% of its land mass. Well, there's no doubt that that's affecting farmland, and it's going to affect farmland for generations. You read about some of the things that happened when, you know, Hamas was undertaking its raids to some of the Israeli dairy farmers that were out there, and how because of areas that now, you know, aren't allowed to have any people in it, you know, that are being held off, those cows are literally starving to death because there's no one there that can feed or take care of them. Agriculture inevitably becomes part of war zones and battle lines, and we're seeing that more and more around the world. Now, this particular organization, you know, with the World Food Prize, it's a slow and steady work because the funding isn't there, the attention isn't there. But, you know, you just hear about stuff like some of the demining efforts still taking place in Vietnam, you know, 50 years after the war. You know, these were lines that were being mined in a battle that my father was fighting in, and I ain't no spring chicken. And yet, you know, they had food there that had been grown on land that had been demined, and the world keeps spinning, and people keep trying to do good work, but it's hard. And it's also hard to keep your focus on it. You get back to Congress and you take a look at some of the questions going back and forth at Capitol Hill. Hey, folks, there's war zones out there. There are Ukrainian farmers that are struggling. There are Israeli farmers that are struggling. There are folks in Gaza that are going to be suffering. And their stuff has got to get done.
When you talk about Israel and the kibbutzes, that's really the way they farm in Israel, right? Cooperative farming.
That's very common. And when they talk about cooperative, it's not just somebody coming up and picking up your milk. I mean, it is people working hand in glove together.
All right, great report as always. Thanks. Talk again soon. All right.
You take care.
There you go. Executive Vice President of Communications and Industry Relations for the National Milk Producers Federation, Alan Birga. That is Farm Talk.